It's now time for the Fantasy 411 podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411. I'm Matthew Leach, talking fantasy baseball with MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Zinke. And we are getting down to the pointy end of the season, but there are still certainly things to talk about, so we will get right to it. And Fred, one guy that you are very high on right now is Kevin Kiermaier. He has been hot since coming back. Basically, if you take his numbers and project them out to a full season, he's a 2020 player hitting 270 on his way to 80 runs. Obviously, he's not going to hit those numbers this year. But that's a guy who can help you in a lot of ways. I love Kiermaier, the ball player. I like Kiermaier, the fantasy asset. Talk me into him a little more.
Yeah, I think he's someone, for me, who he was widely owned at the beginning. I sometimes look at players from this angle. He was widely owned prior to being injured, and then obviously his ownership dropped off a cliff when he was on the DL, and now probably partially due to lack of interest by some teams in some leagues, and just forgetting about him, he's still really widely available. Like, he's available in pretty much every 10-team league, a lot of 12-team leagues. And I think you summed it up pretty well, where he's a leadoff hitter who has a respectable batting average this season, and he's probably would have been a 2020 player, maybe even 25, I think, in the steals column had he stayed off the disabled list, and probably 80, maybe even 85 runs. So I know the Rays lineup isn't really performing that well overall right now, which hurts him a little bit, but overall, I just think this is someone to own in September, where he can probably get you in September five steals, you know, three or four home runs. Those steals would be really valuable in a roto league, and you don't have to go to the Ben Revere types to get them. And that, I think that's really valuable. You don't have to own Rajay Davis to get your five September steals. You can own Kevin Kiermaier and get help in every category.
Yeah, I mean, I think it really, and so often I've become something of a broken record talking about this. I do think it really is a question of kind of what you need, because I think there are some scenarios where what you really need, I kind of feel like Kiermaier is a guy who has more value almost as a full-season player than a September pickup, in that a guy who can help you kind of across the board but isn't great in any area is a guy who's going to help you a lot over the course of the year. The one thing I think about is I think there's a real case to be made, not that there are guys who are going to steal you 10 bases in September sitting on the waiver wire. I understand that. But, you know, I think in some cases what players may need is somebody with a little more specific, somebody who has a better chance to get you six or seven home runs, and maybe you sort of sell out in other ways. Somebody has a better chance of hitting for average. You know, I think, and so I'm not down on him. I do wonder about the relative value of a guy like this for an end-of-season pickup relative to holding him over a full season.
Yeah, no, you're right. If you're kind of chasing one category or one specific skill set, either the speedster or the masher or the 300 hitter, then he's probably not your guy. But I will also say that I find, and I've made this mistake often in my leagues too, where, so we're at a point right now where there are 4.5 weeks left in the season, and sometimes owners will look at their standings and say, you know, oh, I'm set for power. I really need to chase speedsters, or vice versa, and they don't take into account enough that, like, there's still 4.5 weeks. And one really bad week can change things dramatically. Like, maybe they look and they're 10 homers ahead of the next team or 12 homers ahead of the next team, and they say, okay, I'm pretty set there. Well, one really bad week can turn that 10 or 12 homers into two. And all of a sudden you think, oh, I really loaded up on speedsters last week. I left a lot of homers on my bench, and now I really regret it. So, I mean, we got to go category specific in those roto leagues now to some degree, but I don't think we can. I think there's still a good market for someone like Kiermaier who can help you a little bit in each area, and then maybe you go really hard sell the last couple weeks into one skill set or the other.
Yep, I think that makes a lot of sense. The Mets, particularly their lineup, you know, it's funny. If you talk to people who cover the Mets or around the Mets at the beginning of the year, they really thought they loved the rotation. Obviously, they were excited about the rotation, but they knew the questions. And people I talked to about the Mets at the beginning of the year, and I'm going somewhere with this, I swear, really thought they were going to live or die with their offense. They really thought, you know, there were some questions about Cespedes, and I was talking to somebody who covers him. I said, look, you know, they can't afford to lose this guy. And the response was, no, that's the one guy they can't afford to lose. They really like the offense. They worry if something goes wrong in the rotation. That is decidedly no longer the case. The Mets lineup has just been devastated by injuries and in some cases by underperformance. But it is not anything like what they hoped it would be. And so where we're going with this is, and I kind of want to use this to open a sort of bigger question as we approach the end of the year and teams get a little more stratified and the bad teams start playing more kids and the good teams start focusing more on getting their best lineups out there every day. To what extent are you targeting the Mets in particular with opposing starting pitchers in fantasy, and who else are you targeting or avoiding? Either way, because, you know, again, we were avoiding the Astros earlier in the year. I don't think that's the case right now. So I kind of want to look at, as we begin, as we get down to these final small margins, how are you looking at matchups and beyond the Mets? Who are you kind of targeting for starting pitchers over the final 5 weeks?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the reason I wanted to bring the Mets up is that they don't fit the process for figuring out who you want to stream against. So when I look at teams that I want to stream against, I'm going to look at teams, you know, that haven't scored many runs this year, or haven't scored many runs in the second half, or have a really low, like whether it's an OPS or whatever stat you want to use against lefties or righties. And the Mets, you know, their offense hasn't been great, but they are 18th in the majors in runs scored. So on the surface, they're not really a big streaming target. But when you look at losing Cespedes, losing Conforto, trading away Granderson, Duda, Bruce, Neil Walker, they're not the offense that they were at all. And now I think they're one of the most attractive streaming targets, right there with the Padres, the Giants, the Phillies. The Blue Jays have become a pretty attractive streaming target. They're last place in the AL in runs scored. Their pitching's a bit of a mess right now. The White Sox are a good streaming target. The A's and the Angels are both great streaming targets for left-handed starters, more so than right-handed starters. So you can see those splits coming out a little bit. And you're right, the teams I'm avoiding a lot right now more are the Cubs. The Orioles have been really high scoring in the second half, so and that makes some sense with them, so I'm kind of avoiding them. And the Rays, I think, are a decent streaming target right now. I'm looking at a few things when I want to stream, and one of the things I look at are teams that strike out a lot, and the Rays haven't been scoring in the second half, and they're second in the majors this season in strikeouts. So there's a lot of ways that my pitcher could be good against the A's because he may only give up a couple runs, or he could be good against the A's because he might strike out 8 batters. So there's two different ways really there that you could have success against them. So I think those are some of the best targets down the stretch. And people have to get aggressive with their pitching if they're not, you know, in first place late in the season.
One thing I really try to consider when I'm doing that, because if you're doing this, we're talking about streaming a pitcher. You know, it's a pitcher who's on the margins. You're not talking about Zach Greinke, and boy, I'm starting him against the Mets, but not against the Dodgers. You know, so we are talking about pitchers who are to some extent on the margins of your roster or the margins of your starting choice. So, one of the things I like to do, and this ties into the Mets, is that I really like to look for two factors. I will feel a lot better about choosing a guy to start against the team if the lineup, the team, and the ballpark are favorable, and I will really only look to avoid somebody who I trust if I don't like the matchup and I don't like the ballpark. So, you know, you talk about Baltimore. That's a team for double reasons. I'll feel a little better about sitting somebody against them because they are so potent and the ballpark. And on the other side of that, somebody like the Mets, you know, I feel good about that because it's a good ballpark to pitch in and not a good lineup. You talk about somebody like the Phillies, I get a little nervous just because unless the Phillies are on the road, unless you're talking about the pitcher at home, you know, I get a little nervous because even with a team that doesn't hit well, they can run into 2 or 3 home runs in that ballpark. So I do like to find those teams, you know, like the Giants, like the Padres, and now adding the Mets to that, where if I'm talking about a marginal pitcher, I like to have that double advantage rather than just one advantage.
Yep, no, that makes sense to me. And the Phillies, for example, are a little better at home this season than they are on the road. So, you know, you have to be a little bit more careful. And every owner is going to have to weigh their own, you know, risk tolerance this late in the season and how much they're protecting ratios versus how much they have to gain in the wins and the strikeout categories, or whether they just have to throw caution into the wind and go for it and just see what happens with the ratios, even if the matchup doesn't look like it could help the ratios. And, you know, maybe they get lucky and it does.
Now, with that, there is, there are probably a couple of Mets if you really wanted to hunt, but there is one Met who has quietly been really effective, and a guy who, you know, I think that there is an opportunity there. He's eligible at three positions. Wilmer Flores, a guy they always believed was going to hit, they always hoped would hit. He still just turned 26, and he's got 10 home runs at 131 at bats since the All-Star break. He's hitting 271 on the year. He's slugging 483, 17 homers in 355 plate appearances. I mean, that's a 30 home run pace, and he's going to play. You know, as much as the Mets are scuffling right now, and as much as they are dented as far as what they have, Flores is kind of a sneaky, nice little option there. Am I too high on him, or do you like him too?
No, I think you're right on the money there. This is someone who, had he been playing all season, you know, full-time, would probably be at least in the low 20s in home runs right now, probably on pace to get 25 to 30 home runs this year, solid batting average. And it's been solid. You know, his career is 260, but he's basically sitting in the 260s and this year 271. Like, he's very consistent where he's not going to hurt your batting average. So, no, I don't think he's a 10-team league guy, but in a 12, because he's multi-position eligible, he might be a nice guy to have on the end of your 12-team roster where you can put him in a lot of different ways, either for the week or rotate him in on a daily basis down the stretch when the Mets have a favorable matchup or they're playing and some other teams have days off. Yeah, I think he could be an interesting guy on your end of your bench, and he's one of the few players who will capitalize on that lineup being so depleted because now he can play more often.
And without, you know, getting too far into the weeds about Wilmer Flores, one thing I like about him is that he looks a little like kind of the all-or-nothing slugger, but he doesn't really fit that profile. He doesn't strike out that much. He strikes out a little better, a little worse than once every seven plate appearances. You know, this is not a guy who's likely to fall to 220. He puts the ball in play enough that kind of 260, 270, 280 range is not at all unsustainable. I think that's the kind of hitter he could be. Speaking of New York and speaking of power, Aaron Judge has been benched a little this week, and to me, the concern is not that he's been benched for a couple of days to sort of get his head right or get his shoulder right or whatever. It's not even so much that he's been slumping. It's that everybody... It's now not a secret. It's out there. Everybody's talking about it. Aaron Judge's left shoulder, which is his front shoulder, is not feeling good. The Yankees apparently have talked to him about getting a shot there. Front shoulder injuries for hitters. You know, I'm this is one of these things that I'm weird about, but I did a lot. Injuries were something I sort of made a priority back when I was on the beat. There are certain injuries that scare me. And front shoulder injuries for power hitters are on that list. That comes primarily from one particular guy I saw. Scott Rowland was never, ever the same after a front shoulder injury as a power hitter. But that's one of those injuries that, you know, if you're going to play with it, you're going to be compromised. There's just no way around that. And so I think it's an open question as to whether you bench Aaron Judge until he proves that he is either right or until they give him a string of days off again and you kind of feel good that he's going to feel good when he comes back. But I think it's a perfectly fair question, not because he's slumping, but because he's slumping and there appears to be a reason for it.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, there's a reason for it. The slump is extended now. Like, his seven home runs since the All-Star break. Like, it's not like he's just striking out a lot, so the batting average is low, but he's hitting for power. So you have to decide if you can live with the batting average. Since the All-Star break, if you start him, you're expecting, like, the pace he's been going, about one home run in the week, which really isn't that special the way that power is available right now. The strikeout rate's really high. I think it's fair, especially if I was in a playoff, like a head-to-head league where I've got a playoff coming up next week. I was interested to see what direction you would go with this because this kind of falls along the lines of the cutting Bryce Harper, if it's logical, right? If you sit Aaron Judge and he hits three home runs next week, you really feel like, oh, I sat one of my best players. But I think it's a really reasonable decision if you have some depth on your team to sit him. I would also bother me if I started him in a playoff next week and he got two hits all week. And I thought, oh, man, why did I start him? I saw this coming. Like, this has been going on all second half. Why was I so stubborn with him? So I think it's a reasonable decision to have to make depending on what your options are.
that's more the side I would come down on. I mean, yes, it is conceivable that he could just go nuts next week. But one, you know, we are in a place, we've talked about this all year, you can find power, you know? Like, that's, again, Wilmer Flores is out there. It's not like you can't find somebody else, even if he hits five or six home runs next week. It's not like you can't find somebody else who is as likely to do that next week without having quite the downside risk. So to me, yeah, the regret I'm worried about having is the one you said, look, I knew better, and I put him in there anyway. So, I'm certainly not dropping him. And if they give him a week and he comes back and starts hitting right away, I'm going to get right back on that. You know, because, again, if he feels good, I think he's going to be fine. But it's pretty clear to me that his struggles are connected to that shoulder, and that's something that is a significant issue.
Yeah, and you made a good point about not dropping him. Bench him. You don't drop him because then he can come back to bite you in two ways. One, you don't get the production if he comes around, and two, your opponent in a playoff matchup or just someone you're competing with to win your league could, you know, could get the production from him. So I would never drop him for that reason. I would, or do everything I could to avoid it, but I think benching is reasonable.
We have talked a lot about Miguel Cabrera, but he's not getting better. We said, I don't remember exactly, a week or two ago, yeah, you know what, if there's a better option out there, if there's somebody you want, you know, I don't think either of us is going to tell you you're going to regret dropping him. Are we now at a point where he's the guy you should be concentrating on dropping if there's somebody better out there? In other words, not drop him just for drop's sake, but is he now a spot on your roster where if there's somebody hot that you want to pick up for a couple of weeks, you think, you know what, I can drop Miguel Cabrera to get that guy?
Yeah, I think we've hit that point. I was looking at some players that are available in, you know, different size leagues and different have different ownership percentages, and I started thinking, you know, say Justin Bour, who is having a really nice season and should be back in a couple of weeks and is sitting out there on waivers in a lot of leagues. Well, if I don't feel good about using Cabrera next week, and like I don't see why you would feel really good about using him next week. Like, his OPS is in the 600s this month, it was in the 600s last month. Like, he's dealing with the back spasms. If I don't think I want to use Cabrera for the next week or two, why not drop him and pick up Bour and just stash him, because I might be okay with using Bour once he comes back because he was having a really nice season. So, and then I started going a little further down the list, you know, like, I don't know if I could ever drop Miguel Cabrera for Wilmer Flores, to go back to something we were talking about a few minutes ago. But, I mean, Matthew, who would you rather have in your lineup next week, Cabrera or Wilmer Flores, knowing that Flores is going to play every day?
Well, here's what I'd say. If I had them both on my roster, I'd start Flores over Cabrera.
Right, so at that point, and that's a pretty deep league when you're talking about picking up Flores, like 12 team, and I don't know if he's available in any 15 teams, but he's probably borderline still. So if you're rather would play Wilmer Flores, and I thought the same thing about Howie Kendrick, who's pretty widely available, is hitting for a high average and a better lineup and everything, then I think then you're okay with dropping Cabrera. And we've discussed this about him. It's like you and I have gone on a slope with him. Like, earlier in the season, we were like, okay, let's wait this out. And then we were like, okay, now you could bench him. Okay, now you could drop him. And now I'm kind of saying, just go ahead and drop him. After this week, there are only 4 weeks left. It's really hard to imagine him turning it around and burning you in those 4 weeks where he hits 5-6 home runs and you think, man, I really wish I'd kept him. I can't imagine that happening.
No, I think that's a fair point. I mean, I think the underlying point here is that if you are at a place with nearly any player where you're not starting him this week, then we're getting to the point where it's worth thinking about dropping him. I mean, that's not across the board. That's not a everyone, but I think that we are at that point where it's at least a question worth asking if you're at that point with a guy.
Yeah, and I think specifically with Miggy, I think there's a better chance that he gets shut down at some point in September than that he actually, you know, resurfaces and is in every fantasy lineup for the last couple weeks of the year.
No, I think that's a really good point. That's something that you have to be aware of with a guy like that. I want to talk about a couple of very intriguing hitting prospects, one of whom I like a lot more in the long run, and the other I like a lot more in the short term. Ronald Acuña is an enormously exciting player. He is now tearing up AAA. That is his third level this year, and he has raked across the board from the Florida State League to the Southern League to the International League. He is, by all accounts, a brilliant defensive player. You don't want to hang this on somebody because this guy, to me, is an all-time great and is going to deserve more Hall of Fame consideration than he gets. But it's not hard to look at Ronald Acuña and the Braves and think about Andruw Jones. He's not the same player, but he is very young like Andruw Jones was. He is a brilliant center fielder with enormous offensive potential. I could gush about this guy for days. He is an exciting player, and I don't think there is any significant playing time for him on the 2017 Braves. So I understand people are excited about him, but while I'm enormously excited about him in the long run, I don't see using a roster spot on him in a this season only league until and unless we see that he is up and playing. Do you have more faith that we're going to see something of him in 17 than I do?
No, I don't, unless the Braves have an injury. Like, even if he came up, my recommendation would probably, it wouldn't be to automatically add him in every league, because I think if he did come up, and I'm not sure that he will because of his age, I think he could just be a, you know, a couple starts a week, kind of get to know the guys, get your feet wet in the majors kind of situation. Now, if he's up and something happened to Matt Kemp and all of a sudden there was a spot available for him to play every day, that would be totally different. To me, he not exactly, but a little bit his fantasy profile to everything that we were talking about this time last year about Yoan Moncada, where he's got 20 home runs in the minors. That's around what Moncada did last season, so solid power. 42 steals, that's around what Moncada did last season. A lot of speed. 137 strikeouts and 41 walks. So Moncada strikes out a lot. He strikes out a lot. Acuña doesn't walk quite as much as Moncada, but if there's anything that slows his progress, it could be making contact in the majors. But we've seen guys like Cody Bellinger, who struck out a lot in the minors, come into the majors and just get rolling right from the get-go. I think Acuña will be really popular in drafts next year, but I'm not recommending picking him up now.
Yeah. Now, a guy that I don't like nearly as much in the long run, because I really think I hate doing this. I think Ronald Acuña is going to play in multiple All-Star games. I'm just that high on him. I think he is a special player. A guy I'm not that high about in the long run, but somebody who has hit at every level and is hitting again and is probably going to get an opportunity is Willie Calhoun. Again, if you're talking about some sort of keeper dynasty type thing, I don't like Calhoun as much. If we're talking about a guy in the short term who might just come up and hit, that's Willie Calhoun. You know, I still kind of need to see him get called up. I don't think I am picking him up on speculation yet. I don't think I'm ready until I know that he's going to come and play. But as soon as I know that, I'm definitely intrigued by him. What do you think of Calhoun?
Yeah, I'm intrigued by him as well. I think he's more of a major league ready bat, and I think the Rangers have more ways that they could get him in the lineup where, like, Joey Gallo's back. You know, he could play left field. Mazara can play right. Mazara's been really up and down offensively this season. Gomez and center's up and down. Shin-Soo Choo's their DH. He can play outfield sometimes. He needs some days off. Like, there's a lot of ways the Rangers could get Calhoun in their lineup. They're really scrapping to make the postseason, whereas the Braves are not. And Calhoun, his bat, yeah, as you said, he doesn't have near the ceiling of Acuña, but his bat is really major league ready. Like, he does not strike out much in the minors. In fact, almost as many walks as strikeouts this season. He can hit for average. He can hit for power. To me, it's maybe a little bit similar, and now that I mentioned Moncada a minute ago, now I'll mention a little Rhys Hoskins. I'm not saying that Calhoun is Rhys Hoskins. I still think that the ceiling on Moncada is higher than the ceiling on Hoskins for fantasy value long term, even though I would, now the way things have gone, even if Moncada was healthy, I would rather have Hoskins for September,
right,
the way he's hitting.
Yep.
Calhoun, to me, this is very similar, where Acuña is sky high in a dynasty league, his value, but late in the season, or maybe even the very beginning of next year, like, Calhoun has that major league ready bat that just doesn't have the same ceiling because he doesn't have a lot of speed, and he's probably not ever a 40-homer type player in the majors.
One guy that I will apologize to you, Fred, was not in your notes, but something that I should have mentioned to you and something that we should discuss, though only briefly. I don't think we need to go in a lot of time over it. But I think there's a name that's going to be coming up soon that people have heard a lot about of, and all I want to do is kind of talk it down, even though I like the player in the long run, and I hate kind of dumping on prospects, but J.P. Crawford was, coming into this year, one of the top-rated prospects in the game. MLB.com had him rated number 7 coming into the year. He has had a really rough year. He is apparently going to get called up. He could be with the Phillies any day now. They're playing Freddie Galvis in the outfield. J.P. Crawford hit 250 this year, 7 home runs, 12 stolen bases, 339 slugging. He may very well be a good big league player at some point, but unless you're talking about a keeper or dynasty-type league, don't just think, hey, this guy was hyped, I need him. He is not ready to be a fantasy contributor right now. But I just want to mention that because he is a guy that I think a lot of people know his name. I'm sorry, I was looking at the 2016 stats on Crawford, but the same is true. He's at 237 this year, 14 homers, but only 5 steals. So just not a guy that I think you need to be excited to get. A guy I'm excited to see. I'm curious to see the player, but not somebody you need to be rushing to get out in fantasy, even though he is one of the bigger name prospects around.
Yeah, I agree. NL, I think he's NL only. You can pick him up because he's intriguing.
He will play.
Almost anyone in the NL with a pulse can be picked up in an NL only, and that's it.
Yep, that's a good point. He will play. If he's coming up and they're moving Freddie Galvis, a Gold Glove shortstop, to get a look at him, he's going to play.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have any kind of high expectations for his performance.
Yeah.
And we are talking prospects aplenty because it's that time of year. We moved to starting pitchers, and Lucas Giolito looked a little better since coming back, a guy that I've just really not been high on because the performance has never really been there. The StatCast podcast, our friends over there, talked about him very recently and looking for some signs, seeing some things they liked in his curveball. I just don't see it. And part of the problem with Giolito, especially in the short term, if we're talking about him as a fantasy option in 2017, is that he pitches for a bad team. He pitches for a team that's not going to score runs for him, and he pitches for a team that's not going to protect leads if he has one. So even if you do like Giolito, I can't really encourage people to pick him up unless there's a really favorable matchup, just because I don't see the swing and miss stuff. And I don't see the opportunity for wins. Do you like Giolito more than I do? Do you see more of a reason or an opportunity there with him?
No, I'm overall pretty sour. And, I mean, he really has had 2 starts, and 1 was a good one. The first start against the Twins, on the surface, okay, he only gave up 6 base runners in 6 innings, but 3 of those were home runs. He gave up 4 runs. He only struck out 4. He has 8 strikeouts so far in 13 innings. As you mentioned, the bullpen, the lineup, I think he could be streamed in a favorable matchup. For example, later this week, he's at home against the Rays. Okay, I would, in a deep league, a 15-team type league, I would consider him at home against the Rays. That's a strikeout-prone team that hasn't hit very well in the second half. I would consider him. But overall, I think this is a little bit J.P. Crawford, like where the hype on Giolito was really big, so some owners may see 7 shutout innings against the Tigers and rush out to pick him up. I'm not there yet.
Here's the thing with Giolito, and look, I am a believer in the value of a great pitching coach, and I am a believer that there is no greater pitching coach in the majors right now than Don Cooper. But this is Giolito's line at AAA Charlotte this year. Let's just take this line and say this is a guy in the major leagues, and tell me, are you starting him in any but the most favorable situations? 24 starts, 128 innings, so a little over 5 innings a start. 1.41 whip, 4.62 ERA, 134 strikeouts, so just a little over a strikeout per inning, which isn't bad, but 59 walks, so almost a walk every 2 innings. 17 homers in 128 innings. This is what a guy did at AAA. It doesn't mean he couldn't do it someday. He throws hard, he's got a really nice curveball, and maybe someday he becomes a good big league starter. But, you know, if that guy's sitting there on the waiver wire, and those are his major league stats, you're not going to pick him up, probably even to stream. I mean, maybe if there's a really good matchup, like you say, if you've got a matchup like against the struggling Rays, then maybe. But, you know, that's not a guy that you're looking to pick up if those are his big league stats, and those are his AAA stats.
That's right. And basically what we're doing now is we're kind of throwing some cold water on him so that people who see the prospect name,
right, yes,
Giolito, and a good start last time out, don't just say, okay, well, he's arrived, this is my big September call-up,
yep,
edition kind of thing. Yeah.
kind of go to the opposite end of this, a guy who basically has been a non-prospect but has been pretty decent in the big leagues is Mark Leiter, son of, same guy. So 3.88 ERA in the big leagues, 57 strikeouts in 65 innings. He had some really nice numbers at AAA this year, 38 Ks and 6 walks in 30 innings. I'm still not really crazy about him, but at least he's pitched effectively at the big league level this year. And the thing about that is the Phillies, the NL East has some bad teams. So, you know, this is a guy where if he's pitching in Queens and he's going against Chris Flexen, you know, I don't mind that. If he is pitching against the Braves, I don't mind that. So I'm not rushing to pick him up, but that's a guy who really has no prospect pedigree. But in the right matchup, I'm intrigued. Do you like Leiter?
I like him more than Giolito. Don't like him a lot. Like, his FIP's up in the high fours.
Yeah.
Like, his BABIP's low. Like, it's 253. Like, he's been fairly lucky on balls in play. I agree with you, though. I think he could be, for someone trying to make up some stats in September, a good matchup-type play. Now, what's interesting is when I look at his game log of late, it's almost gone opposite the matchups. Like, he came on in relief at Coors Field, 9 strikeouts and 4 1/3 scoreless innings. He struggled in San Diego. He shut out the Marlins, a little over a week ago, which the way Stanton's hitting right now is really impressive. Held them to 1 hit in 7 innings. So it's almost as though if I was using him matchup-based this month, I would have used him at the wrong times. But you can't take a small sample size and say that there's anything to that. So I think, the NL East, like you said, not a lot of intimidating lineups right now. He's someone who could get a decent amount of strikeouts and hopefully at least just an ERA around 4 down the stretch. Won't really hurt your team's ERA.
Blake Snell has kind of become the opposite of the pitcher we had come to know and be frustrated by. Of his last 7 starts, he's gone 7 innings 3 times. He's gone 6 or more, 5 out of 7. But he's also not striking out guys like he was before. Not bad. 36 strikeouts in 7 starts and 42 innings. That's not bad. 3-1 strikeout to walk. 3.38 ERA over his last 7 starts. And when you get a situation like this, I'm never quite sure what to make of it, because when a guy starts succeeding but succeeds in a different manner than how we expected him to succeed and in a different manner from sort of when the strengths that were there when he was struggling aren't really there. And that's kind of what we're dealing with Snell. Snell was a guy who wouldn't get you innings but had huge strikeout ability. I kind of wonder, it kind of makes me suspicious, like, I don't automatically assume with this guy that now that he's pitching deep into games and being more efficient, the swings and misses are naturally going to follow. To me, it is entirely possible that that could kind of turn the other way, that he could be efficient. The efficiency could fade, and he could, in trying to do something different, it could all turn the wrong direction. So I like Snell. I'm certainly not opposed to him. I like him more than Leiter or Giolito if we had a matchup. But I'm not really ready to buy just because I think it's a little weird how things are going for him right now. Where are you on Snell?
Actually, I'm kind of in the mindset that he's been a little bit lucky lately overall. I mean, he had the 7 shutout innings against the Mariners, but he only gave up 2 hits. Well, I mean, even if Snell is pitching really well, 2 hits in 7 innings, like, nobody can sustain that. He went to St. Louis, he gave up 2 runs in 7 innings, and he only gave up 4 hits. So I think he's overall just been maybe a little bit lucky. He has struck out 15 batters in 14 innings in those 2 starts.
Yeah.
But I mean, if he just gives up hits like I said, Clayton Kershaw can't consistently give up hits at the rate that Snell gave them up in the last 2 starts. So if he just goes back to giving up hits at a normal rate, those 7-inning starts become 6-inning starts. In those 14 innings, he still walked 5 batters, so the control issues aren't totally gone. I mean, he can strike out a lot of batters. So if you want to roll the dice on him down the stretch, and I think what we're coming up with a lot of these pitchers is look at the matchups, you know, whether it's Leiter, whether it's Snell, Giolito, maybe we like one a little more than the others, but look at the matchups, and Snell is a good one to chase if you think you can get some strikeouts down the stretch. But I think maybe overall, I don't think that he's totally turned the corner yet.
Yeah, I just worry when a guy who is known, when what he does is miss bats. And again, he's like, you know, 15 strikeouts his last 2 starts, but we're kind of looking at this overall trend. I worry when a guy has some success but not enormous success by kind of getting away from his game. I kind of wonder where that goes. Speaking of pitchers who have been frustrating in their stints in the big league level, Tyler Glasnow has been really good back at AAA. 131 strikeouts in 87 innings at Indianapolis this year, and may have an opportunity. Is he a sneaky pickup option, or we've just been burned by him too many times to do anything without seeing something from him at the big league level?
Yeah, I think he's a sneaky pickup option. I like those AAA stats are unbelievably good, especially the strikeouts. The only thing that throws some cold water on Glasnow for me is that the Pirates are talking about bringing him up in creating a six-man rotation, not bumping like someone right. like Chad Kuhl or Trevor Williams from their rotation, which means that it's unlikely Glasnow would ever have a two-start week down the stretch if they go to that six-man rotation. But, I mean, if you could get if you got one start from him in each of those last 4 weeks, on the flip side of it is in one start, he can't hurt your ratios too much. He does have that potential to strike out seven or eight batters anytime, even in the majors, anytime he starts. He has that potential. I don't think that because the AAA stats are really good that he's broken through because he's always been great in the minors, but I'm interested. If they firm up plans to bring him up like this weekend or next week and put him in their rotation, then I'm interested. And if I had a free roster spot, I might stash him right now just through the weekend and see what happens with him because if the matchup was good, I would consider trying him right away. Like I said, when he has a bad start, he tends to just kind of be wild, walk a lot of batters, and end up throwing four innings. Well, in the 800 or 900, 1,000 innings your team will amass this season, 1,200 innings, whatever, three or four innings aren't going to kill you.
The Cardinals trade Mike Leake, apparently just for salary relief, and to make room for Jack Flaherty. I like Leake okay in Seattle. He kind of is what he is. Maybe the ballpark is a little more favorable. The designated hitter is not. He's a guy, I think he is now what he was before. If you see a good start or two from him and you see a good matchup, I'm fine playing him, but he's not going to light anything up. He's not going to get you a lot of strikeouts. Flaherty, I'm intrigued by. I don't really, I'll be honest, I haven't seen the kid pitch. He is not somebody that has really been on the radar that much. MLB.com liked him coming into 2016, but that is literally the only time he has been a top 100 prospect. One strikeout per inning, really low walks at AA and AAA. Those guys, and again, look, I'm scouting the stats here, and that's dangerous, but those guys who thrive, who really succeed by not walking guys in the minors rather than blowing hitters away, I kind of have a prove-it-to-me mindset on them when they get to the big leagues because that's a much harder game to play in the big leagues. Do you see more to like in Flaherty than I do? And I'm not down on him. He's kind of a prove-it-to-me kind of guy to start with. Do you like him any more than that?
No, but because he had success in AAA this year, I think he's probably already in the group with me with guys like Leiter,
yeah,
Snell, Giolito, where, let's be honest, like you put them as the last starter in your lineup, you're kind of holding your breath and crossing your fingers in September and hoping. Like so with Flaherty, if you see home to the Pirates on his schedule,
yeah,
you give him a shot and you kind of cross your fingers that you get the 6 innings and 2 runs and not the 5 innings, 5 runs, which is really what you're hoping with Snell or Leiter or someone like that. So I think he's already at least in that class. He's ahead of the Ubaldo Jimenez or, the pitchers who you just won't, to the James Shields, pitchers you just won't touch because you've seen enough to know that the odds that you get something good from them are really, really low. So I think he's already cleared that bar. He may have kind of cleared Leake already for me. Kind of not impressed with Leake. Just is what he is, as you said, and him going to the American League, I know he's in Seattle, which is not a bad park to pitch in, but him going to the American League for me is a bit of a nick on him because he doesn't strike out a lot of batters, and this is just without the pitcher spot, it's one more potential person to get hits off him now.
Yeah, to me, he is right now in a class with a guy like Wade Miley, where just like,
yep,
if you get something good, fine, but probably not the best fit of skill set and opportunity. Yeah, I agree with you. I'd definitely rather have Flaherty than Leake. One of the weirdest lines in baseball this year, and particularly when matched to the pitcher, is Andrew Cashner, who has a 3.30 ERA, barely a strikeout per two innings, a 1.4 strikeout to walk ratio, and 11 homers allowed in 133 innings. It's like he's pitching in 1984. And it's particularly weird for a guy who made his name by throwing really, really hard. He was a guy where we were excited about the arm. I don't buy it one bit. I do not buy a guy who doesn't miss bats in Arlington. I do not buy a guy who doesn't miss bats in games against the Astros. I know he's got a 3.30 ERA, but he's also got a 4.40 FIP and a 1.29 WHIP. I'm not buying it. You want to jump on that 3.30 ERA, you go right ahead. But I look at that body of work, and I can tell you which one of those numbers I think is going to normalize, and it's not the FIP. Is this a guy you take a flyer on for a start or two? Because I don't even think I'd do that, honestly.
Well, I was thinking, we both agree, like, he's not a 3.30 ERA guy, but what is he? Is he the I guess he's about 4.30. That probably makes about sense. So now he's back, and he's just the veteran member of the group involving Mark Leiter and Blake Snell and Jack Flaherty. Like, I guess he's just a veteran in that group. I think he does have a 3.30 ERA, so I'm putting him ahead of the Wade Miley's and the Ubaldo Jimenez and the James Shields, where I'll at least consider him, especially if I'm in a position maybe where I need wins but not strikeouts quite so much, because even in a two-start week, what are you going to get from him for strikeouts? Maybe six? At that point, you might as well just use a one-start pitcher. So, he's kept it going long enough, I guess, that I'm not totally concerned that I'm going to end up with like a 9 ERA from him if I use him in a two-start week. So I'll at least consider him, and I know he's going to be one of our two-start pitchers later that we'll talk about, but I'm not racing out to get him, which is really unusual for a season with this much offense and a pitcher with a 3.30 ERA and 22 starts.
We will move on to ninth inning guys in just a minute. Before we do, I want to take a minute to tell you about the Cut Forecast. Cut Forecast is the podcast from the staff of MLB.com's Cut 4 section, focusing on the lighter side of baseball. If you've hung around this far with us, we think you might like the Cut Forecast, too. It'll make you laugh, and you might even learn something about baseball dogs or ballpark food. Last week's episode was all about Players Weekend, including a spirited debate about the best nicknames. And then Jake and Jordan from Cespedes Family Barbecue interviewed former Little League World Series champion Luke Ramirez. If that sounds like something you'd be into, search Cut Forecast, C-U-T, the number 4, C-A-S-T, in Apple Podcasts or wherever else you get your podcasts, and click subscribe. Jake and Jordan are really funny, and anything that involves Jake and Jordan, I am probably checking out, so get yourself over there. We get back to closers. Blake Parker, you buying?
Well, we've been burned before, but yeah, I am buying. I mean, this is something that just makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's almost like our Cam Bedrosian talk from a couple weeks ago, just with Blake Parker instead, where, I mean, Blake Parker has a 2.14 ERA. He's got a 2.26 FIP. He's got a 0.85 WHIP. He strikes out a lot of batters. Why can't he be their closer? I mean, he's not walking batters. He could be their closer. It kind of makes you wonder why Mike Socha didn't try this before Keenan Middleton got saves and Bedrosian got saves and Bud Norris got more save chances and Yusmeiro Petit got a save. Like, I'm not sure why it took so long to try Parker, but he's clearly getting the chances now. Like, he's got three since August 26th, like three in the past, what, 4 or 5 days, and he's converted them all with ease. I think that he could be their closer the rest of the way, don't you?
Yeah, I can see that, and it's the strikeouts. 75 strikeouts in 59 innings, that's a guy that I'm willing to take that chance on. That's a guy that I'm willing to say, you know what, if this doesn't go well, I can live with that. I'm willing to take the hit if that doesn't work out, because he is striking guys out at a remarkable rate, and that's a good start.
Yeah, it seems like if you pick him up and it doesn't work out, it'll just be because Socha decides to go in another direction again.
Right.
It won't be because possible. Yeah, it is. It won't. But in that regard, he won't burn you. If you have him in your lineup for a week, right, he'll probably still throw some high leverage innings, get you some game, you know, throw three innings, get you four or five strikeouts, you know, not hurt your ratios. It probably won't be that he just, you know, combusts in the ninth inning and he hurts your team along the way.
Are you handcuffing Greg Holland with anybody?
I'm still, because I don't totally believe in that Jake McGee or Pat Neshek are the handcuff. Like, I kind of like Neshek, but it's kind of been McGee. for that reason, I'm kind of just playing. Like, I don't know. I don't really want to grab either one of them, so I'm kind of just wait and see with Holland. Even if I have to want to bench him right now and just maybe pick someone from a different bullpen, maybe I would put in McGee. If I was in a really deep league where if I'm benching Holland, it means I need to replace him with some reliever who could possibly get me some saves, then maybe I would grab McGee for now. But I don't feel a real strong urge to pick up McGee or Nishek right now. Do you?
No, I'm not really crazy about either of those guys. And again, you know, the threshold for me with Rockies pitchers is just so high that, if I'm not handcuffing. If he loses the job, I'm willing to take my chances on trying to be the first guy to pick up whoever gets the job, particularly since it's not abundantly clear which one it is. You know, if it was really clear that it was either McGee or Nishek, okay, maybe. Probably not even then, but if we don't really even know, I'm certainly not picking up, I'm not handcuffing a Rockies reliever for a 50% chance that he's the guy in the 50% chance that the guy who has it loses the job.
Yeah, that's said perfectly. If it was a 90 or 100% chance that McGee was next or Nishek was next, I would be happy to pick them up.
Can you drop Aroldis Chapman in any format at this point? He's still not right. He's still not closing. They have a zillion other options. Can you drop a guy who was like a, in some places, like a fourth or fifth round pick?
I think you can. I would drop him for Blake Parker right now, wouldn't you?
I am pondering that very question as we speak, as a matter of fact.
I think I would do it. I think Parker's in the ninth inning now, which Chapman isn't, and Parker's pitched a lot better than Chapman this year, including striking batters out. So
yeah.
I would drop him. I don't know. I can't see Chapman getting back in the ninth inning. Like, his last appearance was August 25th, and in that appearance, he gave up a solo home run, and they lost the game because of it. So it's not like he's done anything to get him. He's still got to start from scratch to work himself into the ninth inning on a Yankee team where every win matters right now. I can't see him really being back in the ninth inning for at least a couple weeks, if not longer. So now you're holding him for hoping for maybe 2 weeks of a closer, which you might get zero. I would let him go if I could get another safe source. Like, I would let him go for Parker. I would let him go for Brad Ziegler. I would probably let him go for him. If I need saves, then I need saves. And I'll go with Ziegler and hope he keeps the job in September.
So here's a curious parallel and something that I don't think you ever would have thought of as a parallel back in March or even June or July. But there's a little bit of a parallel to Kyle Barraclough here, who is a guy whose upside is enormous, but who's actually been pitching well. We don't know if he's going to get the job, where there is some possibility that he has real value to you, even if he doesn't, but it's not a guarantee. I'm not saying you're going to drop Chapman to get Barraclough, but if you had them both, you'd have Barraclough in your lineup before Chapman right now, wouldn't you?
Yes, I would, for sure. And you're right, I wouldn't drop Chapman to get Barraclough, because even though I think Barraclough has some potential to get saves in September, Ziegler's pitched well, and I think Chapman probably has a little better chance to get saves right now in September than Barraclough. But you're right. If I had them, I would not want Chapman in my lineup next week,
right?
Like, under any circumstances, even in a 15-team league, maybe in an AL only, but beyond that, in any mixed league, if I own Chapman and I want to hold it out for a couple weeks because my league's deep and there's nothing I want on waivers or whatever, we have big benches, he's not. I don't think he should be in your lineup in any league next week. There's a better chance that he just throws an inning next week than that he actually gets you like a win or a save or five strikeouts or something like that.
Yep. And finally, we move on to the two start pitchers, and it's not a great list, but there's some just interesting options. Rick Porcello at home against Toronto and Tampa Bay. Herman Marquez home for the Giants and at the Dodgers. Jason Vargas at the Tigers, home for the Twins. Adam Conley home for the Nats and at Atlanta. Jared Eichhoff currently scheduled at the Mets and at Washington, but that's one that I think you got to be watching closely. He came out with some physical issues his last start. I would not assume he makes that next start, so we probably should just go ahead and scratch him. Erasmo Ramirez, home for Houston and the Angels, and Andrew Cashner at Atlanta and home for the Yankees. I like Ramirez. He's been pitching well. Two starts at home against one not as good as you might think lineup and one not very good lineup. I like Vargas pretty well. Those matchups are pretty decent. I know Minnesota is a pretty good team, but they don't scare me. I guess I like Conley all right, but boy, you can get into trouble against even this somewhat compromised Washington lineup, and you can get in trouble in Atlanta. But to me, those are the guys that stand out. Anybody that I'm missing?
So I'm going to put Porcello as my number one, and I don't believe in Porcello, the pitcher, really at all, but I just think that the matchups against the Blue Jays and the Rays right now are, like, really attractive matchups. He's got home starts against Toronto, just, like, is a really depleted lineup right now. Tampa Bay strikes out a lot. Like, that one could bite me, but I feel really good. That's the one I feel the best about. Ramirez is probably my second just because they're home starts. I don't think I can use Vargas, and I own Vargas in a lot of leagues, and I enjoyed the good stretch, but he has, I think I, so my break point with Vargas was last night when the Rays hit him pretty hard.
That's fair.
And that was, like, I feel like lefty should, any lefty who's, he's been really struggling the last 2 weeks, and I felt like that was my break point. I used him in all my leagues. I thought, against all those left-handed hitters, he should be able to be fine, and he was at home. And now I just, the Tigers have, are almost all right-handed. I don't know. I just, I can't use Vargas. So I think Porcello and Ramirez are the ones for me. And maybe Cashner, as much as we bashed him, is my third, just because I don't really like the other ones.
Yeah.
So I just crossed my fingers. At least the start against the Yankees, is at least he has that at home. He goes to Atlanta, like, he goes into the National League at least, and it gets pitcher spot. So he's probably my third. It's not a great group, though.
All right. That's the Fantasy 411 for this week. We will be back in a week. As the season gets shorter and shorter, we will still be talking fantasy baseball with you. So come on back. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and thanks, Fred Zinke, for taking the time to talk.